Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
Welcome to a very different, special, whatever you want to call it, edition of the BBP. We are post Beyond the Stripes.
Yeah.
Sitting inside the beer garden area of the Moorline Lagerhouse, and it is hopping tonight.
This is about as close to a live BBP.
Yes.
You're going to get.
We've got the massive pot of coffee here.
Yes.
Two cups full. I've already spilled. I've spilled coffee and the creamer in one evening. That's a nice little 1-2 step.
Yes.
So we're here because it's been a crazy 24 hours, and we're trying to find time to squeeze the podcast in. So this is going to be like if you sat around with us after BTS and talked about football. That's what it's going to be. So let's start with this. We were in Denver. We left the stadium. We left Sports Authority. We left there at 2 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah.
And we were both back here and having to do the show 17 hours later, two time zones away, one insane airport, which was just slammed with people who've been on days of delays.
Right, yeah.
And we're here on no sleep, doing the thing, drinking the coffee with the big pot.
Right, just for you. It's needed, though.
It is needed. There's a lot to talk about.
Kind of a... I'll start with this. I know your Twitter social mentions were way different than mine. People are upset about the loss. But my general feeling was... they lost. On the road to a playoff team, close loss... It felt more like the Arizona loss to me than, say, Houston at home earlier in the year, where people lost their minds.
Yeah.
Now, I know your situation was a little different on social media with what you heard, but I thought the team, Josh Shaw at Beyond the Stripes Tuesday night said the team was positive post-game, or at least, in their moments together, but I don't know. I think they seem... They were definitely disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think they felt they kind of let one get away.
Yeah. Here's my thing. I agree with everything you just said. I do think that they played very well. Going in with a backup quarterback against number one defense,
moving
the ball the way they did, the defense making a lot of nice plays, going to overtime. The problem I have, and I sort of wrote this in my lead of the main story, was in a game that was dubbed as a playoff game, in a game that had all of that background to it, it did play out like so many playoff games have, where there they are doing so many good things for a half, and in the second half, can't make the plays to finish it off. And, I still remember clear in my head Dan Horton joking with us on the preseason podcast about why am I a slave to the 57-6 number?
Right.
Because I can't get past it. In the four playoff games, they've been outscored 57-6 in the second half. All those in games where it was close within at least a score at the break.
Right.
What happened? They come out, they dominate. They dominate pretty much the entire first half.
We thought, even Paul Docherty.
Yes.
It's like they're going to the Super Bowl. I mean, he's just like, of all guys, right? I mean, they looked that good in the first half.
Two perfect drives, and then you had the Nugent missed field goal and momentum change. And that happens. But then you saw in the second half, outscored 17-3 after the break and could never get that thing going to really reverse it and make the plays to win the tilt. And whether you're going back to Arizona or you're going looking at this game or you're looking at the playoff games, I don't know what it is, and I don't know why it happens like that, but it just seems like we continue to get these second halves that cause issues in these huge games where they can't put teams away.
Well, I'm going to blame you for that. You wrote a great story on Paul Gunther trying to get out of Mike Zimmer's shadow.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that, Paul, to me, was that Mike Zimmer's shadow has a lot to do with 57-6.
Absolutely.
And, you know, again, second half, they couldn't get off the field. And now several players, they said it to you, they asked me, brought up third down. Head coach brought up third downs, right? Players like, wait a minute, what were we? And by the total, 36%. Really good.
Yeah.
But not quite as good. Overtime, 100%. Denver converted.
Yes.
Including a 3rd and 10 early in the drive.
Yep.
Third quarter, first drive for the Broncos. 2 for 2 on third downs.
Yep.
Leads to a touchdown.
Yep.
And to me, with a backup quarterback, and we can talk about A.J. McCarron and how we think he's doing and how he's handled himself, and I think he's proven to be a competent backup, but that's what he is. So where is the number one scoring defense? Where is the defense? Against Pittsburgh and against Denver, they needed turnovers. They needed, what you talked about, maybe an unscripted score.
Yep.
They needed what happened in San Francisco.
Yes.
Setting up A.J. McCarron in the red zone.
Yeah.
Or in a short field. And it didn't happen against a quarterback, Paul, that was bad. I've said on this BBP, and I still believe
Turkey
it.
Bowl.
Turkey Bowl. Clown Osweiler. I'm not a believer.
But and that's why I kind of thought when we saw the fumble there, Michael Johnson forces it, Reggie Nelson recovers it. I was thinking that was going to kind of be that moment. And then the offense couldn't capitalize.
Right. It was almost too late and too deep.
Yeah.
Because Denver was able to get all the way down the field, and it was almost like, now, if they didn't pull the blade dead and Reggie Nelson runs it back 50 yards and sets it up, maybe.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like it just delayed the inevitable. Just like the McManus missed field goal.
Yeah.
It was like, unless the Bengals win a toss, I had no, at that point, I wasn't seeing a defense that was going to get a stop.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. So now to kind of go in and reset where we're at now, you have the Bengals tied with Denver, both at 11-4. Of course, Denver owning the head-to-head tiebreaker. So if Denver beats San Diego at home, the lowly Chargers, Phil Rivers.
Phil,
he won't go quietly,
nope.
But the Chargers are a bad club.
Yeah.
So the likelihood of that happening is not great. If the Chargers can't beat the Broncos will have the number 2 seed, and they could still be the 1.
Right.
But bottom line, they would have the bye.
Right.
The Bengals would lock into the 3, regardless of any other results.
Right.
Bengals can't be worse than a 3. If San Diego can pull the upset, and the Bengals win, then they will have the bye. They'll get the 2. And the other scenario, if the Bengals lose and Denver loses, but Kansas City wins,
right?
They would win. Kansas City wins the West.
Right.
Denver falls all the way back to the wild card, and the Bengals win the head-to-head tiebreaker in Kansas City and make it the bye.
Right.
Are you still with me?
Yeah. So which all could have been avoided
by winning the tilt.
But anyway,
find a way to win a tilt. So that's where the playoffs stand now. I think if you have a chance to get the bye, you go for it. You go all out. Because, listen, the Andy Dalton thing, as we have discussed often, I think we don't know that he would be back for a division, for a wild card game.
Right.
There's a, at the very least, a much better chance that he would be back
right.
for the divisional game. So it's important.
Yes.
There was a reason why that game at Denver was so big, and I think that plays a major role. They're facing a reality that's in play that they might have to play a first round playoff game with AJ McCarron at quarterback.
Right, and
that's not going to go well.
No, and again, because that's the thing. For the flashes that we've seen out of AJ McCarron and the legitimate, and he's. But again, that was the thing. And I understand what the culture is here. I've come to understand a lot more in my 9 months here. But one of the biggest unknowns on the 46 active roster was, what if the starting quarterback gets hurt?
Yeah.
Can that guy do the job? He had never played an NFL snap, never thrown a pass. We saw some good things in the preseason, but that's the preseason.
Yeah.
So what we found out is they have a backup quarterback.
Yes.
Which a lot of teams don't have. Look at Indianapolis. I guess Matt has some
that can win you some games.
Right. I don't. But see, when you get to the playoffs, whether it's the Jets or the Chiefs, or it turns out to be the Broncos, like, those are still good teams, and I don't know if they can score enough. And frankly, the defense a lot of times, Paul, is kind of, when they've had to step up and get it off the field. Not even saying score a touchdown, do anything crazy, just get off the field.
Yeah.
They can't get off the field.
Yeah.
So
late in some big games.
It's got to be a scary proposition to say, oh, we got to host the Jets or the Chiefs.
But on the other side of that, you're talking about hosting the Jets or the Chiefs when you just went to the end in Denver, in Mile
right.
High, against the Broncos, who arguably are the best team in the AFC.
Yeah.
So, with McCarron.
Right.
So,
wait, are you being the positive playoff guy?
I'm just saying, under that logic, I'm saying that there should be a belief that he can win them one against, maybe even against the Pittsburgh. You know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe, which is still in play. Steelers still a possibility to get into the playoffs. They'll need some help, though.
Right.
So, after they lost to Baltimore,
right.
which is like old news at this point.
Right, yeah.
And the Bengals
won
the AFC
champions.
Yeah, they won the AFC North. Forgot about that. We told you to print the shirts a long time ago. You should have already done that.
Right.
We'll see how it all plays out. Right now, everyone wants to know the question of the year. What is Andy Dalton's status? As far as we know, the week-to-week thing still applies. And anybody,
right.
there are reports out there, and anybody that says that they have a for sure feel that he definitely will not play in that wild card round, there's no way to truly know that. Even if you may think it's a strong possibility, you're talking about an injury that's all about healing, and it's still 2 weeks away
right.
of a 3 to 6 week injury. I don't think you can say any of that for
right.
sure. At this point, I think maybe you'll have to know a little bit more next week, because
right.
you have to start practicing and throwing and seeing how it feels.
Right.
Oh, by the way, AJ McCarron has a sprained wrist now in his left hand.
Right.
So now you're dealing with that as well, but I think it looks like he's going to be okay to go. But then you're bringing out the possibility of Keith Winning or Moe Sanu in the Wildcat
right.
for a whole game was going to be something, but I don't think that's going to be
right.
something happening now. Let's. So we're kind of getting into the scenarios. I want to bring in a little bit on this game. We have AJ McCarron. We talked a lot about him. Him talking after the game about, of course, the final play where he had the fumble, his
right.
wrist, and just kind of some of the general feel he got going out there. And what a game where he really acquitted himself well and showed that he can handle a pretty darn big stage and a pretty darn good. Darn good defense. So here's a little bit with AJ McCarron from after the loss to the Broncos.
It was my fault. I told the team that, our offensive guys, and told Russ. I looked up to see the coverage, and just the snap caught me by surprise, and I take the blame. It's my fault.
It's not your fault.
What's up? Yeah, I got a wrap on my wrist right now, and we'll check it out tomorrow and see what.
You guys obviously came out on fire tonight. What was working, first of all, those first two drives for you?
Well, I mean, we felt like we could do that the whole time. I mean, we know they're, you know, the number one ranked defense in all the categories, you know, they're a heck of a defense for sure. But we felt like if we executed and, played the way we were supposed to play, we'd be fine. We put ourselves in a good situation. And, you know, the big thing for us was coming out, starting fast, and moving the ball, and we did that.
Did they change looks or anything in the second half after those first two drives?
I mean, a little. And they came up with some different blitzes, tried to disguise different coverages. But, they weren't playing the exact same. In the first half, they were playing a lot more man, and we were capitalizing on it.
Did they do something different with AJ?
No. Like I said, they played normal zone. I mean, they didn't do anything special or spectacular. We just got to execute better and make more plays.
So that they went more zone in the second half?
Yeah. Yeah.
AJ said they heated it up more.
Yeah. I mean, they started bringing some blitzes, but, we hit them on a couple that they brought for sure. And we had a big third down or whatever down it was to Mo on the out route. They brought pressure, and, we tried to hit AJ on post on pressure also. And, they played well in the second half. They made more plays than we did. Yeah, I've said this the whole time. They make my job easy, and I just try to put it in their area and let them go up and make plays. It's an unbelievable group that I, have the opportunity to play with. Great organization. I just really love being a part of this team, and I wish we could have pulled this one out tonight. Sucks to, lose a game like that when you fought so hard. You came back, battled back, had a lead, lost it, battled back, and gave gave yourself a chance to win the ball game. And, I take the blame.
Is it the deep ball to AJ? He said he stopped in the route, but you put it up high. Were you thinking that he was still going to be able to go get it? Take you through that play, what you saw there?
Yeah, it's exactly what he said. I think he when he was getting pushed down by the corner, he thought the safety was going to take him, and safety shut his feet down, and just tried to put it out there and let him go get it. But I throw that 100 times out of 100 times, and he goes and makes that play. So. Like I said, we just didn't make enough plays in the end. But, that was one heck of a football game, I thought. And it was fun to be a part of. Like I said, just sucks to come out on a losing end. But it was a good, fought, hard game for sure.
How badly did you guys want that bye? It's still out there, of course, next week.
Yeah, we all wanted it, but that wasn't our thought process going into this. It was a big enough challenge to come here, play a good Denver team, and, as an offense, them being ranked number one in every category in defense, that was our thought process. We wanted to go out and win a game, just like we always do. So it would have been nice, but like you said, we still have an opportunity. You never know what happens next week. As long as we take care of business, and that's all we can do right now. So.
You didn't score two touchdowns, running an offense pretty much about as well as you get running. Then you don't score again, no touchdowns. How much of that was them? How much of that was you? And how much of it is just football?
I think it's a mixture of all three. If football's not going to be perfect in the game itself. They did some really good things. I mean, like I said, they're the number one ranked defense in every category. So they're going to make plays. They have guys that are pro bowlers, and they get paid too. So, like I said, we just didn't make enough plays when it counted. And then we put ourselves in a situation to win the ball game, and, you know, I kind of failed the team. So, and that's what it comes down to. You're not always going to score touchdowns, but, we tried our best. We really did. I mean, guys were working. We were in the game all night, and it was a fun game, fun offense to be a part of, though.
So that was a little bit of McCarron. And, the funny thing is he had done exactly what the Bengals asked him to do, and they brought him in. Don't turn it over. Make a few plays, and that should be enough, and let the defense win the game for you. He really did that until the last play of the game when he has the snap, go off through his hands, hit off his rib pad, and DeMarcus Ware ends up recovering it. I'm okay with where AJ McCarron is at with this team, but I do think for the first time you really saw a team that missed its quarterback against Denver, because we'd seen all year in so many situations where the chips started to fall down, Andy Dalton had been the one to lift that offense up. Talked about this on Beyond the Stripes tonight. And the chips started to go down in the second half as the offense sputtered and sputtered. And that place, that stadium was literally shaking the entire game when Denver had any kind of momentum going. I mean, it was a crazy atmosphere. And they needed that guy. And Denver, Wade Phillips, a great coordinator, disguising, bringing blitzes, moving to the zone, all these things that Andy Dalton is a master at deciphering and counterattacking. And they didn't have him. And they didn't have that guy to do that. If Andy Dalton plays that game, I think both you and I agree. I think they win it pretty handily. I think they were the better team.
Yeah, they are the better team, and frankly, we've talked about this all year, Paul. They're one of, if not the best total team in the AFC, in my opinion. If Andy Dalton doesn't get hurt, they beat Pittsburgh, in my opinion. If he's available Monday, they win, in my opinion. But to your point, though, I think you're talking about that last play. And I was in the group with Russell Bodine talking about that botched snap. And he didn't see it. I mean, he snaps it, and then it's over.
Yeah.
So he's asking us, what did we see? But in this little bit of audio coming up, you'll hear him say, there was a dummy count, and he really wasn't quite sure what happened and what that meant, and he didn't quite know. And he also talks a little bit about the changes in the first to second half. But I think that's your point, Paul, where, again, you're talking about a backup quarterback in his second start.
Yeah.
Trying to navigate that sound, that defense. It was a problem all game long in terms of getting plays off on time, burning timeouts. And in the end, in the biggest moment, it caught up to him.
Yeah, you're right. So let's do that. Let's bring in Russell Bodine from after the game, talking a little bit about all of that.
Honestly, I haven't watched it. I have no idea.
Watched it?
It looked like he wasn't ready for it, that's all.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was a dummy count. I don't know. But I know.
Did it feel, the snap feel good, leaving your hand?
Yeah, like I said, I haven't seen it. I don't know what happened.
It looked like it was there. It was just, he didn't like he was ready as all.
I don't know if he took his eyes off it or what happened, but we'll get it figured out.
The number one seed is no longer a possibility, obviously, but it's still a bias. I mean, everything is still in front of you guys. I mean, just shake this off.
Look, we came out and played a heck of a football game, went into overtime, and didn't get it done. I think we fought hard all night, and I think AJ did a great job commanding the offense all night long. We just came up a little bit short, obviously not the outcome we wanted. Just kind of go back, watch the film, correct our mistakes, move on with the next one. Like you said, everything else is still out in front of us.
What's that? How does it change things the way that it ended? That way, does that make it a little...
No, I mean, what can you do about it? I mean, a loss is a loss. I mean, regardless of what happens, you just got to put it behind you and move on. Like I said, I think, you know, AJ did a great job of running the whole offense all night. I don't know what happened on the last play. I haven't seen it, but, so, I mean, like you said, you've seen it, so I probably know better than I do. But, I mean, like you said, everything's still in front of us. Just keep on, put it behind us, take what we can learn from it, and keep going.
What worked well in the first half for you guys? I mean, you came out and really established the front and that running game early. I mean, 80, 90-yard drives, scoring drives.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just is a credit to our coaches, you know, coming in with a good plan from the get-go. You know, those they work all week on those opening drives, those opening plays, and, you know, obviously they put together a pretty good scheme there. Like you said, I mean, we came out, had two good drives in the first quarter, and first half, whatever it was. But
and then, you know, as Kevin said, he's like, they are the number one. They're that good for a reason. It's that second half. He's like, they kind of raised their game. And is that kind of what you felt or saw up there in terms of why they kind of shut some of those things down then?
Yeah, I mean, just to echo what Kevin said, I mean, they're the number one defense in almost every category, I guess, you know, other than points allowed and whatever it was. You know, you're not going to go out there against a defense like that and then, you know, run up and down the field on them. You got to go out and they're going to make you earn it. And we did that in the first half and we didn't do it in the second. So
there's Bodine. Here's the thing. So let's just play this scenario out that Andy Dalton, let's say he does come back for whatever playoff game, okay? And Tyler Eifert is back.
Right.
And
by that guy.
That guy.
Right.
You know, the guy who led the league in touchdowns.
Right. Was about to set an NFL tight ends record.
Tight ends record for touchdowns. If Tyler Eifert comes back and Andy Dalton comes back and this team doesn't get itself hurt next week against Baltimore, there's a confidence in that. A pretty extreme confidence for sort of feeling like they survived. And now, granted, we're also right back where we started with the whole storyline of the year. Can they do this, that group or anybody else? But I think having those guys back brings a lift. And what I've always said, if they could just win one and get that psychological monkey off their back,
right,
I feel like they could make a run. If they could be healthy, if they could find a way to win a first one, I think that would have the feel then going to Denver with everyone
right,
as you feel like that team's going to go in there and win.
Right. And I'd be curious to know, and again, we wouldn't know it, Paul, until it happens. But I would wonder about that psychological effect of our guy is back.
Yeah.
Counteracting the, oh, here we go again,
right,
moment. Because you're right. I think if they somehow get the two, especially after all this, right?
Yeah.
You kind of back in because you didn't take it in your own hands. You didn't go through the front door. You go through the window.
Yeah.
You know, maybe feet first.
However, right, you got to get in.
So if they do that, right, and the guy that led them to a 10-2 record comes back with the other guy with 12 touchdowns who no one can cover.
Yeah.
At home, I think the fan base would be re-energized, at least because, again, that's what I believe, I guess. You can speak better to it, but I just think idea that, like, holy cow, this is the first time since the beginning of December that all these guys, that the number, what, 2-3 scoring offense in the league is all together, and you know, it would have to play out, but I would be curious if that would really have it counteract almost the nerves or the whatever, because even Andy won't let us crawl in his head as much as we try, but I even wonder for him, it wouldn't even be about the playoff game. Like, that would only, think about it, Paul, like, that week-long press conference, like, we'd have to talk about not winning a game, but what, it would all be about coming back.
It'd all be about,
how do you feel?
Dalton,
what's practice like?
Yeah.
What, we're asking all the guys, not about, you know, we have to ask them about the playoff game, but it's still all about the other thing. right?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I could be wrong.
How
but
hard
I think
is that? How hard is that? Just stepping right back in after a month off and having to face your right. ultimate demon.
Right. That's a good. That's
the other.
Point
I mean, there's
well, yeah.
so much to this. This season that lacked storylines
for
I mean,
9 weeks.
It had one storyline for 10 weeks. The Bengals are good.
Right.
And that was the over and over and over and over right. and over and over again. Now has a million of them, and it's right. gotten incredibly interesting with all of this that's happened.
Right.
Because it's not like the Bengals are putting these guys on IR, because the possibility of getting the band back together
yeah, right.
still exists.
Right.
And making that run that everyone was anticipating a month ago, despite all the adversity
right.
that we've seen. And so I think that's really one of the most interesting aspects of all of it. Let's go and let's dive into the deep end here, into the Vontaze Burfict topic, because that was a loud sigh in case it didn't come in over the audible noise. The Vontaze Burfict topic is one. Yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. We got to pour the pot of coffee
pot
out
of coffee.
A little deeper. If we're going in on Burfict, we're going to have to go ahead and pour the coffee out. No spillage, please, as we do this. So here's the thing about Vontaze Burfict, who goes off after the game about how he's targeted and they only threw the personal foul, which is a 15-yard penalty in overtime that basically set up the game-winning field goal drive. He's targeted, the flag's thrown only because he's 55. And my answer to that is, yeah, probably,
right.
maybe. But you dig that grave a little bit.
Right.
I mean, you do.
Right.
That is what you are.
Right.
And you're proud of that. And you're, you know, I talked to that story on Paul Guthrie you're talking about. And during that interview process, we were just talking a lot about his relationship with Vontaze Burfict and how close they are, and how that's been a big part of this defense's development, his return. And, you know, you got to have a good relationship with that guy to handle him and not let it be, what are they called? You're purposely wild, effectively
yeah.
wild. Right? As a
yeah.
pitcher?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you want to have the Randy Johnson throw that goes
right.
into the net.
right.
Always the Aroldis Chapman, you know, now New York Yankees Aroldis Chapman, who would always have the one throw when he's 0-2 up. It goes off the middle of the screen, and the dude just wants to go in the dugout. Doesn't want to see their pitch.
Right.
Vontaze Burfict is that pitch for the Bengals.
Right.
He is that thing that keeps the other team's head on a swivel, wondering where 55 is at. Now, the outside of that is referees are looking for that, and
right.
they know what you are, and they're not going to take – there is no benefit with that.
Right.
Yeah, that you are 55. Maybe they do target you, but that's your personality.
And I was a little surprised – and well, I guess I shouldn't say I was surprised. The fact that Marvin Lewis in this post-game press conference with us kind of wondered the same thing. Like, oh, usually that play gets, they let them play that out. You know, they're fighting along the sideline, and the guy falls out of bounds, and, you know, Carlos Dunlap's like, yeah, you know, it's, we've all been there, and it's 55, but you're right, Paul. It's whether, you know, Tez says that Virgil Green flopped, you know, that there's no way that, you know, he pushed him like that, and that man would have fallen over, basically. It was really inopportune. Like, for
yeah.
all, since he's been back, he's been involved in some stuff.
Every
right?
game, he's involved in something.
But this is the first time where it actually cost them, in my opinion.
Yep.
Because they had it turned into a 23-yard play. And that kicker had just horrific, one of the worst field goals attempts I've ever seen.
Shankiest of all the shanks.
So it was a 37-yard eventual game winner. Tech on 15.
Right.
There's no confidence in that kid.
No.
He had missed kicks every week leading up to the one he shanked.
Yep.
You know, ifs, ands, and buts. I mean, you know, maybe that, you know, Gary Kubiak runs some different plays and they still run down the field. What I talked about earlier, where defense
yeah.
could get off the field, whatever. But like, it, so I know it's not A equals B there, or A to B, whatever. But it did hurt them. in that particular drive. And I'm now going forward, you know, as you and I were talking before, Beyond the Stripes, is does this have to change what 55 does?
It won't. And they don't want it to. That's part of it. They want him to be that guy. They're fine with that. They don't want it to hurt them.
Right.
And he's going to have to be a little bit aware of that stuff.
Right.
But time and place, you know, I don't know. I hesitate to say that he should play different because that's who he is. And if you have him out there not being who he is in a lot of ways, you just want him to be a little smarter about it.
Right. Which is funny, Paul, because this is my first year around Vontaze and around this defense. And since he's been back, all I've heard from Marvin Lewis on down is how smart of a football player he is in terms of understanding the defense, in terms of knowing the defense, knowing what's coming from the offense. But it's counteracted with every defensive guest we've had on Beyond the Stripes on this, you know, since he's been back, is he's got a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
A little bit crazy. And it's like, they haven't figured out now. How many years? They're not going to figure it out in a week.
No.
And change it through the playoffs.
You take that for all the good you get.
Right.
In their opinion. I mean, that's their view of it is, for all the good that the way he plays and all that he is, you know that you take some of the bad with it that happens, a play like that. But I do want to bring in the perfect sound because it's interesting hearing everything that he had to say after the game about that play and the way he's viewed in general by referees and those across the league. This, of course, coming a couple weeks after he was fined 70 G's for multiple personal fouls against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So here's Vontaze Burfict from after the game against the Broncos.
Disappointing because you guys kind of cleaned it up. First half was so good. What kind of changed in the second half on the third down?
I can't even tell you, man. You know, it's the NFL. You go to halftime and make adjustments, and they make good adjustments, and, you know, we caught the same calls, and, you know, we made plays in the first half, and they made plays in the second half. That's all it is. It's the NFL.
Your head coach and your teammates say you kind of caught a raw deal on the penalty there at the end. I mean,
yeah, that was bullshit. The rest was late to blow the whistle all night tonight. I mean, I know it's cold and all, but, you know, I'm trying to strip the ball. I'm waiting for the whistle. Whistle's not blown. Then, you know, he happens to flop, and then they're going to, you know, say that, but it's all right.
That's what Lowe said. He's like, they see your number.
Yeah.
And they automatically, you know.
If they can't do that at the end of the game, though. It's, you know what I mean? Because if it was somebody else, they wouldn't have called it, but it's all right.
Carlos said that you were just trying to get the ball out of the game.
Yeah, I'm stripping the ball. The refs was late to blow the whistles all night. And, you know, once they threw the flag, once the dude flopped, the ref looked at me and sent us my number and then threw the flag. So, you know, I can't control that. Just keep playing football. But, I mean, you know, the refs, obviously they have it out for me. But, I mean, you know, you can't call a bullshit flag like that at the end of the game.
If it's anybody else, they don't call?
Yeah, he looked at my number and then threw it.
He looked down right.
Yeah, I asked Ed Hockley, like, "Hey man, what happened? Like, no whistles was blown." He's like, "Yeah, no whistles was blown, but he said you hit him late." I said, "What?" Just went on about it.
Okay, so now we're checking them off right now on the list here. Let's get to Mike Nugent.
Yeah,
who fans just. They can't take it. They can't take the missed kick. A missed kick is just the life of a kicker is tough.
Yeah.
Hey, would you rather have Nuge or Shankopotamus? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, who would you rather have today? I mean, Mike Nugent had made 11 of his last 12 kicks. Had missed one against Pittsburgh, and you know. He's had his rough moments here. Of course, the missed would-be game winner that forced the tie against Carolina last year
is
his most notable. And, you know, he's been inconsistent at times. But you're not just finding great kickers on the street right now.
No.
I mean, you're just not. And maybe in the off season they would consider something, but they're pretty invested in Nuge for the fact of the way he does handle his failures. His right. percentages are in the 80s. You got a kicker that's going to make 80% of his kicks, and you know he's not going to go off the deep end
right.
for missing a few, like we saw from McManus
right.
in recent weeks, and then the one Monday night. There's something to that, a guy that has that mental ability, and the guy that has a relationship with his team and his coaches
right.
who know that he believes in him and has a can go out there and swing with confidence and not right. feel like he's about to get cut. For that reason, I like Mike Nugent. He missed a 45-yard field goal that would have changed the dynamic of the game right. completely. And in a game against a team where the two number right. one defenses in football, points are at a premium, you got to have it. He missed it by about a foot. He said, I have a hard time coming down on a guy and saying, you got to cut him and get somebody else in here when you look at the totality of what he has done.
Right. Well, especially because, maybe Bengals fans will look at the Steelers and say, oh, they found that guy, Boswell. But that guy was like the fourth option.
Yeah.
You know,
they had to go through three guys that missed a whole lot of kicks before
right.
that.
Right. So, it's just not – it's a hard thing to do. I understand it. Being in Green Bay the last few years, Mason Crosby, went through a slump 2 years ago that was terrible. To the point where the Packers brought in training camp competition. He had to win his job.
Yeah.
And he had a – he had actually the worst shank of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Against Detroit at home, that cost the Packers a game. But you're right, those veteran guys, I don't know if the fan base is confident. If you had to run that guy out there in that first round of that playoff game at Paul Brown for 49 yards, the win.
Yeah.
But the team does.
Mm-hmm.
So, for whatever that's worth, he's the guy. And as you said, he owned up to it after the game. And, he's responded, at least this year and last year, as you said, he's responded well
yeah.
after that. So I guess if he's got to win the game Sunday against Baltimore, you can almost pencil it in because he's been very good after misses.
Yeah. I do want to, I think, just to kind of give you a feel for Mike Nugent as a guy and his reaction. I do want to bring in, I caught up with him after the game, and just a little bit of his reaction to what happened and missing the kick and all that. So here's my conversation with Mike Nugent after the game against the Broncos.
You just buried that one. Was that kind of feel like kind of a redemption one that you
yeah.
really wanted to?
I hit that ball like I hit every other ball the rest of the day except for the one.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the tough part about this job is you got to hit the ones that matter.
Yeah.
Or the ones that count. And had a great week, great warm-ups and everything, and the one bad ball I hit today happened to be one that, I needed most. I think games like this, against teams like Denver, points are, they come at a premium.
Yeah.
You can't miss out on points. So, of course, me as a kicker missing out on 3 points for us is just eats me up because you don't want to see them out there attempting a field goal to win it. Whether he misses that or not, makes or misses it, it's like, we shouldn't even be in this position.
Yeah.
In my mind, that kick should have been to tie it, not to win.
Right, yeah.
So it's one of those ones you want back, and I think it'll be pointless if I don't learn from it, and I think I did at the time. And hit the long one really, really well.
Yeah.
But again, it's how we're hitting the ball all day, so it's just I can't stand there and missing opportunities for my team to get 3 points. I did that tonight, and I pride myself on it. I let that one get
it real close.
Right.
It looked like it was. Did you think maybe it was still going to stay through even then?
It's one of those balls. 9 out of 10 times, I can tell you, that was a perfect hit.
Yeah.
It's dead center. And I would have said that, but then I looked up and it was a little bit right, so I think it was an alignment thing.
Oh, okay.
Where the ball went, it wasn't a miss hit or anything, so where it went is how. It's not where I tried to align, but I set myself up to hit it right there.
I mean, I know it's just a scribe thing, and I don't know if people really care that a guy is a stand-up guy and a good guy. I just, I mean, they could care less if Mike Nugent was a good person if he made every kick.
Right.
He is a good person, though. If he's a good guy, I mean, it takes a lot to stand up. And when you're feeling like you can hear it in his voice, how he was feeling, and stand up and admit it, and there's just a lot to that. There's been a lot of guys around here that haven't done that. I'm not naming any Shane Graham names. I'm just saying that that's happened before.
Right.
And so, I think that's part of his thing. So let's kind of move forward here a little bit. What do we got? Oh. So jaggy. Oh my god.
See, Trent and I really enjoyed watching you watch the Jags. And I tell you, you know, I think Sunday at Paul Brown, see, BBP listeners will know, last week, I don't even know what week it is anymore. When we were in San Francisco, everyone in that visiting press box was like, what is going on with these clowns from Cincinnati? This Jaguars game. Home at Paul Brown, I think that entire press box would be watching the game, watching you guys watch the game.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much I'll be watching. Our seats face the field, obviously, but there's going to be a much more important game happening on the TV screens behind us.
Yeah.
I may be watching where I'm watching the Bengals game on the screen and the Jaguars game on the screen right next to it. I might be up in the dinner area on Sunday, because it's coming down to this. One game for all the steak. One game for all the steak. Jags, Texans, and what an interesting predicament we ended up in on Monday night, where magically, through the forces of the NFL, we had, if the Bengals would have beaten the Broncos, it would have meant, due to strength of victory, God bless you, we're almost to net TDs on that one. Through strength of victory, you would have had the Houston Texans locked into the fourth spot and no reason to play any of their starters next week against the Jaguars.
Didn't happen.
Did not happen.
No.
Did not happen.
Although I kind of laugh at that, because other than J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins, isn't like their whole team backups anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, granted, they came here and beat the Bengals. But they would have
played Whedon.
Yeah.
They wouldn't bring Hoyer back off a concussion, I can't imagine. Right. So that would have been big. Not that it matters. I mean, I'm sure Whedon can throw for 400 against that Jags defense. Oh, my God. So brutal.
Yeah.
So anyway, it all comes down to this on Sunday for the precinct bet. We'll see what happens.
Paul's got the pink issue that we've talked about the last few weeks from my end of view. It's great. It's great theater.
It's great theater. It's great I'm not theater. Feeling great.
You should bring your Steve Bierlein little starting lineup.
Yeah. I should. I'll bring it for good luck.
Yeah.
That'll be my key. I agree with you. I agree with you. So we had that. So Jaggy, we had our trip to Denver. Cigar bar on Sunday night.
Solid.
That was a nice spot. After it was a nice little spot inside the hotel that C. Trent recommended.
Yeah.
It's great having C. with us on these trips.
Right.
Because as a baseball writer, he has all the great insight and the best hotels and the best bargain deals and the way to work the system.
Right.
So he gets to this great hotel. It's a great deal. He got this awesome little Scotch bourbon cigar bar place. Right. It's fantastic. It was a great little trip.
It was solid. For as little as few hours as we were there, it was enjoyable.
It was. What else do we need to hit on? We need to hit on anything else?
No, it's funny. I guess we can kind of end on this, because it goes back to that beginning of the year storyline of January, and that the Bengals won the division on their couch.
Yeah.
Zero fanfare. Nobody cared. Nobody cared Monday. Now they care on Sunday. I mean, they all tweeted out stuff to each other and had a good
Gino
time.
Gino tweets.
And they enjoyed it a little bit in that way. But it's just kind of funny that that's how it played out, and that it is all about it is and it was all about January when it came to their game on Monday. There was no like, hey, we won the division. Hey, you know, it was more just, you know, we
it's a testament to how they change expectations that first half of the season.
Right.
You know, it really is. And oh, by the way, since starting 8-0, they're 3-4.
Yeah.
So, wait. It don't matter.
Well, you're positive on this playoff. You're feeling it.
You were
positive earlier. Don't lie.
I was positive. I don't know why. I don't know why I was positive. I regret it. But I was a little positive. I don't know. I liked your point, and I think it's a very good one about this whole Dalton thing can completely throw off the negative mojo that would surround that first playoff game with the return of this guy who was supposed to be the reason they can't win there.
Right.
It's just such a great turn of events. This is a fantastic turn of events. So I guess we need some music to go out. I think we need some music to go out. And since we're at the bar, you know, and it's been a long week, you know, how about a little one bourbon, one scotch, and one... Unless there was a song all about giant pots of coffee.
No.
It's not as fun to sing about giant pots of coffee.
No, it's not.
It's just not like a sexy rock and roll thing.
No.
But
it's a good pull.
Yeah, I think so too. Since we're doing our bar episode at Moorline, this just only seems right that we break this out. So this is what you get this week. We, of course, will be back next week. So thankful to have a 1 o'clock Cincinnati Paul Brown Stadium home game after 2 weeks of West Coast trips. And then, of course, after that, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. The storyline we've talked about all year. Can they finally break the streak? It's all happening. It's that time of year. We hope that you will continue to follow along with us. We've been loving bringing it to you all year. Happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe 2016 will be the year that it all turns around.
Four times a charm. Fifth, seventh, fifth, whatever.
Yeah. On that note, we're out of here. We'll talk to you later.
The house went blue. I come home one Friday, had to tell the landlady I done lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't get the rent, and out the door I went. So I goes to the landlady, I said, you let me slide, I have the rent for it tomorrow, the next day I don't know. So she let me slide it on, you know, people. I notice when I come home in the evening, she ain't got nothing nice to say to me. But for 5 years, she was so nice. Know what she would love to do. I come home one particular evening, the landlady said, you got the rent money yet? I said, no, can't find no job, therefore I ain't got no money to pay the rent. She said, I don't believe you're trying to find no job. Said, I seen you today, you were standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired, I've been walking all day. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come out and have a rent, and out the door I went. So I go down the street, down to my good friend's house. I said, look, man, I'm outdoors, you know. Can I stay with you maybe a couple days? He said, let me go and ask my wife. He come out of the house, I could see his face. I know there was no. He said, I don't know, man, she got a funny, you know. I said, I know. Everybody funny. Now you for that too. So I go back home,
I tell the landlady, I got a job, I'm gonna pay the rent. She said, yeah. I said, oh yeah. And then she was so nice. Lord, she would love it, love it. So I go in my room, pack up my things, and I go. I slip on out the back door. Down the streets I go. She hollering about the front rent. She'll be lucky to get in the back rent. She ain't gonna get none of it. So I stop in a local bar, you know, people. I go to the bar. I rent my coat. I call a bartender. I said, look, man, come down here. You got down now. So what you want? A one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know when. I've been drinking bourbon, whiskey, scotch and gin. Gonna get high, man, I'm gonna get loose. Need me a triple.